Honorable Bas, I just want to give you 15 minutes to ask. No. All of you. So for me to be able to keep you within 15 minutes, please just pick up one question that you think if you don't ask, you'll die. So pick up the best question and be brief with it, and then so that, because these are non-executives, so they must be in Johannesburg today. So they're also on an 8 o'clock flight, and you are also on an 8 o'clock flight to our residence. So there's an alignment of interest here. So can we go? Let's hear. I just want each and every one of us one pointed short question. Thank you. Yes, madam. Let me check who will be talking. Honorable Peters. Honorable Zembo. Okay. We've got it three. Ah! Okay, let's see how it goes.
Thank you very much. But I think I had more than one question that if I would not ask, I would die. But having said that, I feel that we were not answered on this important question, on the secretariat issue, on the secretary failing to submit the minutes and everything. However, Chairperson, my last question would then be, if ESCOM feels that NAMSA did not approve their appropriate tariffs, if they strongly feel so, why are they not taking the matter for dispute through the relevant resolution mechanism, Chairperson? And thank you. I will.
Thank you. Honorable Peters? Or should Honorable Zembo come before you? I see that you are struggling something. Honorable Zembo?
Okay, thanks. I'll try to prioritize. let me take one. Let me take the one on the ESCOM business model. Perhaps one should be forward-looking, Chair. Chairperson, ESCOM is operating in a changing business environment, which requires continuous improvement in its business model. For instance, ESCOM's revenue loss is also the result of many households and the private business, which for one reason or the other have decided to shift or go off the grid and use the alternative energy system, particularly this non-grid solar system and all that. You will find that even many of our homesteads now would have the solar system, which in terms of ESCOM, business would actually have a negative impact. Now you see, Chair, a situation where ESCOM with its grid is now on toe-to-toe with this emerging kind of other business through non-grid. How then is ESCOM in trying to look or to adjust into this kind of situation, coupled with this check, would to check as to, now we are all talking the fourth industrial revolution. Is ESCOM investing in the new technology, especially to reduce cost where necessary?
Chairperson, my question has got two legs. The one is related to the rationale for ESCOM to stop training why have you reduced as a company, or are you not interested in investing in the future expertise that is necessary for the company, but also as the board representing the interest of Eskom shareholders who are rightfully the South African citizens. What is your view with regard, especially from the cost of power or electricity and the impact thereof on the poorest of the poor? We know that there is a cushion for the poor through the indigent policy, but how do you see yourselves as a board encouraging Eskom as a company to speak to the end consumers about the need for them to pay for services, especially those who can afford, but also a chairperson, the issue of the municipal debt. Eskom used to be able to really put a pressure on municipalities to pay, and I remember there were quite a number of times where towns were literally threatened with being sold off or their assets being sold off by Eskom, and provinces would intervene. I would really want to know what is the board doing to make sure that through DPE and DMRE, the municipalities can be supported by COPTA to respond to this. Yeah, a chairperson, just one smaller younger one. We were informed that the intensive energy users are gradually abandoning Eskom as a supplier of choice for electricity. Is the need for Eskom supply in the region and in the of SADC, has it dissipated? And is Eskom not able to look at that option to increase the sales a portion of your loss to the South African market, I would want to say. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, my last bite. The responsibility of a director to the company. Now, I heard the chairperson was talking about that some of the decisions have been taken by the shareholder, but from the fiduciary responsibility of the directors, can the directors justify buying electricity from the IPPs at more than 200 cents per kilowatt hour, and you sell at about 89 cents per kilowatt hour? I'm saying I hear the noise behind that. I'm saying now, taking your fiduciary responsibility into account, are you able to justify that? Is it good for the company? And what have you done from your side as far as that's concerned? Thanks. Please, Prof, with your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the question. I'm trying to be brief and my colleagues will assist me. I'll just start with some of them, perhaps not in the order they were asked. But let me deal with the one about the Eskom business model first. And it touches on Honourable Member Peters' question and also on your own question. In the previous round of questions, there was the question of, does the board see themselves as the saviours of Eskom? And what I was going to say in response to that is that one of the fundamental problems is Eskom's mandate. What does the shareholder want Eskom to be? Does it want it to be a commercial company, or does it want it to be an instrument of the developmental state? And at the moment, Eskom is expected to be both. And doesn't know whether it's, as they say in English, neither fish nor fowl. Not sure if it's a bird or a fish. What is it trying to do? So clarifying that mandate and separating that role will be one of the most important things the shareholder can do. Because when the two roles are mixed up, it gets very messy and very confusing. Regarding the business model, in the industry we talk about the utility debt spiral. And this is not something unique to Eskom. This is happening all over the world to vertically integrated electricity companies. They are in a death spiral. They lose sales as a result of new technologies, so they have to put up their tariffs. The more they put up the tariffs, the more people go off grid and they lose more sales. And so the spiral goes on and on and on. So, you know, the real question here is, do we want to be sitting here next year at the same time having this same discussion, and the year after, and the year after that? And the answer is, we have to change. The world has changed. The model that worked, the business model that worked for Eskom well in the past, is no longer the appropriate business model. And that's why the President, in his State of the Nation address, talked about the separation of Eskom into three parts: generation, transmission, and distribution. The important point, I think, is that this is not an Eskom issue. This is the electricity supply industry of Southern Africa issue. And Eskom is such a big part of it that it can't be divorced from that. So what Eskom does is very influential in the electricity supply industry. And we have to go through, as about 140 other countries in the world have done and are doing, is they're going through an electricity supply industry reform. And it's not a going from A to B. It's a reform that's a process. Turkey has been at it for 20 years. Many other African countries have been at it for several years. Namibia is quite far ahead of us now in these areas. So we are embarking now for the second time on a reform process. Remember, the first time we started in 1998 after the white paper on energy policy. All those efforts came to nil. Now we're doing it for the second time, and we have to get it right. But the most important point is we have to keep moving. This process of reform has to, there has to be some change every year, at least a little bit. It's not just a once-off thing. Because the technology, as you pointed out with the fourth industrial revolution, it's changing much faster than we can. Our laws are out of date. Our regulatory dispensation is out of date. And it's almost the laws, by the time you finish it with them in Parliament, and you know the process that goes through, by the time they're gazetted, they're out of date. That's how fast things are changing. So are we investing in new technologies? Well, these two new power stations are the most up-to-date technologies available in terms of coal-fired power stations. In terms of other technologies, and this relates to the other question, are we justified in paying the IPPs the prices they do? They do. This was not an Eskom decision. This was a government decision. Government decided to have IPPs. Government went on a bidding round. Government concluded contracts with those IPPs for those prices as a result of bidding round. And then government said to Eskom, you signed the power purchase agreements at those prices. That was an instruction received by Eskom. It had nothing to do with Eskom's own decisions about that. So the question that's posed is a very difficult one. What do we as directors in our fiduciary duty feel about that? Well, there are two things. The one is we feel a bit uncomfortable, but it wasn't us who made those decisions. It was government who chose those technologies, some of which were 400% higher than Eskom's average tariff. On the other hand, we have a country which is trying to attract foreign investment, and sanctity of contract is a very important thing. For a big state and enterprise to breach sanctity of contract would be a very, very serious thing. To dishonor a contract, for example. So what is happening is that the Minister of Public Enterprise and other ministers have approached the IPPs and indeed the coal miners as well to say, people, can we rediscuss this matter? And that discussion is underway and it's going on. From a strictly cash point of view, the undertaking from NERSA is that Eskom will be cash neutral regarding the IPPs. So whatever we pay them, we are supposed to recover from the tariff. That is the intention. So now let me not take up too much time. The question of tariffs and resolution of tariffs, Kelly, maybe you can talk to us about the various court cases in regard to that. And then rationale for reduced training. Maybe Jan, you can deal with that one, and the municipal debt, and the sales in Africa. And the EIUG question, abandoning Eskom, perhaps you can just touch on that as well.
Honourable Chair, with regard to, is there any other dispute resolution available to Eskom and NASA currently? No, at the moment there isn't. When the Eskom board decided to review the first decision, the 2018-19 determination, the Eskom board did meet with the NASA board. We said this is our understanding of what's available to us, and in that meeting it was confirmed between with the NASA board and their legal representation together with Eskom that the only avenue for dispute currently is through the court processes, Chair. So that's why we're utilizing that avenue at the moment.
Thank you, Chair.
Jan, just one moment. I think Dr. Compton, allow me to speak to the municipal debt issue as it is raised by the honourable member. And I think I want to take the advice of the honourable member earlier on to say that can we have a candid conversation and an honest conversation so that then we don't sit here trying to manage each other. Because this thing is falling apart. And it falling apart means that it's going to sink the economy down with it. And I think we're going to have to be honest, Chair, about the issue of the municipal debt and say that we all know that the issue of municipal debt is a political decision. It's got absolutely nothing to do with the Eskom board. You know, the honourable member earlier on asked a very important question to say that, do you see yourselves as this board being the potential savers of Eskom? And I think if you were to look at just these 10 heads, surely this is too big a task for 10 people. And I think if you were to combine all of us here in this room, it is too big a task for all of us in this room. This is not an Eskom issue. This is not a government issue. This is a South African Inc. issue. This is an issue that affects 57 million South Africans. Eskom at the moment is a sovereign risk, and its collapse means the collapse of the South African economy. And I think, therefore, honourable member, if we were given the latitude to actually make decisions without political interference as this board, I will tell you what we will do. We will actually go to South Africans and say, honestly, we need to load shed at least for the next 8 months. And I'm saying that, understanding, Chair, that load shedding for one day in this country costs the economy 2 billion rand. But that would be the honest conversation, because you're sitting with units that in the next 5 years are going to be nearing about 50 years old. It means, therefore, they are old. These units have not been maintained for the past 10 years. The reason why they are falling at no warning is precisely because the decisions that have been taken in the past were at the cost of maintaining these things. So if you're going to be given an instruction to say that keep life at all costs because we're nearing elections, it's actually problematic. So I wish that we were actually to be given the latitude at this board to do what we're supposed to do. And I think if you're talking about the issue of recapitalizing Eskom, honestly, I would say that bring in strategic equity partners, because this thing is too big for the fiscal to contain. I mean, we continue getting warnings from the credit rating agencies to say that the money that you keep on putting in these SOEs, Eskom in particular, you know, doesn't augur well from an investment perspective and from an economy perspective. So I think we're therefore going to have to make those honest decisions and have those candid conversations to say what is it that really needs to be done to salvage Eskom. If we're going to be talking about the issue of labor, labor itself can't continue to sit there as principals with a red pen and think that they don't have any role to play in this. When we made this decision as this board last year to say that we're going to give 0% increases because we realized the dire situation of Eskom, it was Labour who said that if you dare do that, it's going to be a declaration of war. And immediately thereafter, you saw the bout of the first load shedding that happened in this country. And we were quickly given an instruction to say, you know what, you are actually going to have to rethink your decision. You are actually going to have to revise your 0% stance. So we are therefore sitting between a rock and a hard place, Chair, in terms of some of the decisions as business people that we know that we have to make. But you're sitting with this developmental state mandate. And I don't know if we actually can continue on that strategy. And the issue of training is an interesting one as well. You know, if you're going to be sitting with a company that has only generated a 1% increase in revenue over the past 10 years, but the costs have actually gone up by 40-50%, you know, and the headcount has gone up by numbers that are unjustifiable, you are unfortunately, Honourable Member, going to have to make a decision to say that, do you continue bringing people in droves? Because in terms of the cost elements, in terms of the income statement, the only thing that we can control as this board is the employee cost, because that is what is within our control. And unfortunately, if you say that Eskom is sitting with 15,000 people too many, it is this very same labor which comes in and says that, should you dare do that, then it's going to make it. But you see, it cannot be. So I think we shouldn't be skirting around the issue when we're talking about issues of Eskom. There are decisions that we know we have to be making as this board, but then the shareholder quickly comes in and says that you can't do that because it is politically incorrect. We spent so much money on OCGTs last year because we were told that the lines are going to have to be kept on, but kept on at what cost? So I think that is the problem that this committee is going to have to appreciate, to say that we on a daily basis sit with those decisions that we know that are, you know, as a normal business person, if this was my company, it was very clear in terms of actually Eskom needs competition for Eskom to actually get out of this lull that it continuously finds itself in. It needs efficiencies, and unless and until it gets competition, then you're not going to get efficiencies at Eskom. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Now I haven't been there yet. I've got it back.
The two last questions I asked in the first round about, in your view, what is it that DPE and government as shareholders need to do to allow for successful implementation of the turnaround plan and the roadmap?
I think it will be wrong. You know, that tone.
That is the correct tone. That is the correct tone. We want that.
It doesn't mean to disrespect, Chair.
We want that. No. That is what we want.
I'm not sure what is being answered, but I say that too, which ransacking the workers, I think is not the correct tool. That which ransacking the workers and would want to blame the workers, it's not the correct tool. That's what I was referring to.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I'll deal with one or two of these. The one question is, why did we stop training? I think the board member just said a very important thing. In the past, if you have to save on your budget, if you have to save on your actions, where's the easiest place to save? Two areas. The one being maintenance and the second one being training. And I believe that this is where we find ourselves with the Eskom as one of the main contributors. So for some reason we stopped, just as an example, technical training, that it was a line accountability. So it was done by human resources sitting in Midrand deciding what technical training should take place wherever in the country. So we've realized that, and that accountability is now shifted back to line. Because who else knows what technical training needs to take place? Who needs to be trained, what level, what training, etc. And then you can hold that line manager accountable. So we've realized that, and that accountability is back. So it's an important point. Then the issue of international sales. Just for the information, Honorable Chair, is I just had yesterday a call from the managing director of Zesco, Mr. Victor Madende.
they are in dire straits at this point in time. It's not going well in Zambia. I actually lived there for 2 years, and at the time that I was living there, we had 8 hours a day of load shedding in Lusaka. Now it's 16 hours a day. So they are looking for 300 megawatts. I spoke to him, and we will get together next week to see if we can give it to them, but non-firm. So only when we have it available, we will sell it to them. We've done the same to Ziza of Zimbabwe. So we're giving them 400 megawatts, also non-firm. It actually is positive, and it's actually more positive. When Ziza approached us, they were owing us about 250, no, it's more. They owed us about 26 million US. Million US. So what we said, we will make it available to you, provided you settle your outstanding debt. So at this point in time, Ziza is paying us $850,000 every week to settle the outstanding debt. And by this rate, and they haven't defaulted once, and by this rate, by the end of March, the debt will be paid off. And then they pay us within 2 days their current account. So extremely positive. And this will be the same agreement that we will enter into with Zesta. However, we still have a challenge, so that's to increase sales, to answer the question. However, we have still a challenge, and we're dealing with that now, and that's Mozambique's EDM. They owe us quite a lot of money, and we don't move forward. Chair, Honourable Chair, those are...
Thank you. Chair Panatile just wants to add something.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to respond to the question around 4IR. There are a number of initiatives within the organization where we are finding 4IR solutions to various aspects of the business. For instance, there is a program on smart meters that has been initiated that will allow us to deal with issues such as bogus electricity units being sold in the black market. So remotely, you would be able to analyze digitally the smart meter from a remote place that would allow you to then manage that more effectively. The challenge is in places such as Soweto, those digital or smart meters are being removed upon installation, so there are still those challenges. We also have a program around at the research and testing center of ESCOM around trying to see how we can better manage the whole issue of coal quality. So being able to test coal as it arrives as to whether the quality is of a good standard or not, and so on and so forth. So there are some initiatives that we have taken as an organization to ensure that we take advantage of 4IR and we use it to solve some of the challenges within the company.
Pulani, you want to add something?
Thanks, Chair. Mine is a very short comment. Honourable Peters, you said there's lack of consequence management because no one is in orange overalls. I would like to just assure you that at ESCOM we are doing our bit. Unfortunately, we don't take people to jail. We hand over our findings to the law enforcement agencies, and we have done so. So for those that we have concluded as ESCOM, they are with the relevant authorities, and we expect them to actually do what they are supposed to do on time. But it seems to be taking forever. Yes, and we are continuing with the rest because it's a big one. It's not a few people. It will continue for some time. But to date, what we have done has been handed over to the NPA and the SIU. And I hope they should be taking the matters forward. We do appreciate the enormity of the task that we have. As Busi said, it's not we are not the saviors, we're not the messiahs. We'll do our best. We need the cooperation and the support of everybody, including South Africans as a whole. More importantly, we need the space to be able to act as directors because the fiduciary duty lies with us. And I think Busi has said quite a few of that. And that we really need as directors because we are held accountable. on the issue of training, as a former trainee, or I came from the training of ESCOM's first of a kind, it's sad to see ESCOM not continue with the training because currently we lack skills. Most of the experienced people we have actually live in the countries. Most of my former colleagues that I used to work with in the nuclear industry have actually left to the Saudis and Middle East of the country, and we are going to run into a crisis of now having to import those skills at a premium. And if you are not even preparing the younger ones to come and fit, have a proper feeding system and succession plan, it's just going to be worse. And thank you.
Cindy, what do you want to add?
Yeah, I guess what I also thought I raised, because there's this perception that everybody's walking away from ESCOM because we are unreliable. We understand that from a customer service and being reliable, it is important to keep that. But just thought to read the numbers of our first 6 months as at the end of October. We have supplied 104,000 gigawatts compared to 105,000 gigawatts at the same time last year. So there is this perception that people have walked away, but in fact we are seeing that even the large users are coming back in, even negotiating some pricing, because we understand the economy is quite bad at the moment. So even them want to negotiate pricing with ESCOM so that they remain as clients of ESCOM. So that is on South Africa. International, indeed, that is where there is an opportunity, because this year we have sold 7,400 gigawatts for the first 6 months compared to 6,000. So it is growing, so that is where we are seeing an opportunity. However, the importance is the repatriation of the funds once we have actually sold to them. Yeah.
So the last question we haven't addressed is this allegation that we are failing to submit minutes. This is a misunderstanding of the terms, I think. And I sit in the Audit and Risk Committee, and I had this debate with the auditors. The auditors' view is that the Companies Act requires you to approve the minutes at this meeting of the previous meeting. And as Jabu explained, we had 60 meetings in a year. We were sitting with a burning platform. The auditors failed to explain to us, still failed to explain to us, where in the Companies Act does it say you must approve the minutes of the previous meeting at this meeting? Why can't you do it at the next meeting? So that was the issue. Yes, we had meetings where we didn't approve the minutes of the previous meeting, but all the minutes were approved. And I think that's perhaps the issue that still appears in the audit statement and is still, as far as I'm concerned, unsupported and unsubstantiated by the auditors.
Can I have something to say there? In lieu of what has been said by the latter speaker, I think it can be joined with that one of the perception of refusal to submit document. I think, Chairperson, can we maybe have that in writing as we requested earlier when we went for an oversight, so you can have...
Prof, do you want to say something on that?
Yes. We will do that.
Yeah. Thank you very much, ESCOM Board, honorable members. The way we have engaged with this matter, again, it goes to what we said at the beginning, that's a very serious matter, and we take it very serious. That's why we appreciate that you are coming here. And you listening to us, hence my comment that Parliament allowed us not to be in the House and engage. My closing, this what we are involved in is not an event, it's a process. We are still going to be engaging. As I alluded to you, I think we are under no illusion that we have got a superhuman being here who are going to be able to solve all the problems of ESCOM. I said all of us have got a role to play, and I even went to different players who must play their role in ensuring that these things do happen. So we're in this pond swimming together, right? With one aim, that we must all float, must not sink. There shouldn't be any doubt about about that. Prof, it's one of those things, the elephant in the room of an SOC, the dual mandate, the developmental mandate and the business mandate. And I think I have been in your seat somewhere where you must deal with that. But the problem, I think what we have done as boards, when things are good, want to be evaluated as private businesses and want to be evaluated on the basis of what profitability you made and so on and so forth. And when things are bad, people will continue trying to and evaluating you in that way. I'm just saying that it's something which is forever there. We have argued as members of parliament in our debates, you'll see, that one thing we've always consistently said is that if ESCOM didn't have a developmental mandate, the majority of South Africans would still not be having electricity today. It's a fact, right? But the problem is that you don't want to, you yourselves, you don't say that. That's what we've done. You don't account for that. The developmental mandate, which you must always try to find, you must measure this. And one thing that I know SOCs have not been able to say, what is the correct measure to try and deal with the developmental mandate so that you are not measured in terms of the bottom line. Okay. I think that's another thing. Cindy, at Transnet, I served on the same board with Transnet. The shareholder came to us and said, we needed to develop a certain town, Doha. And we looked at the finances and the books and so on, and we said, we can't do it. Fiduciary responsibility of the director. We said, based on what we can't do it. And the shareholder said, this is the decision of the cabinet. As directors, we said to the shareholder, please, can you please write to us and what's the right way, but absolve us and say, this is your decision, it's not the board's decision. Because what you need to do, we have elevated this thing, and the government takes responsibility because the government knew what it was doing on that. But as a director, you have fiduciary responsibilities to the company that you are responsible to. So you should be able to raise those. I'm just making that example, that it's in the nature of the space that you are in if you are in an SOC. So that if there's an abnormality, you are able to raise it and say, okay, you are saying we must do it, but understand that's what's going to happen. But, Booth, you are raising an issue, which I think Honorable Price has raised, that amongst other things that you would like to do, you think there's a problem with labor, and if you were allowed without this interference, so-called, okay, but I'll say if you're coming from the shareholder, then we can say, okay, continue and see whether we can deal with the bigger risk which comes with that. With your workers themselves, that say, okay, you say you want to manage them, deal with them. And I don't think you'll be able to deal with that thing. So there is a balance that you also need to appreciate that, because if government would say, okay, continue, and then we fold our heads, it wouldn't work. So there's that balance. If you do your pest analysis, political issues are part of your pest analysis that you make. So I'm just saying that there are all those things that we need to, all these boards that you are juggling with, which is in the nature of the space that you are in. But as I said, this is not an event, it's a process, let's engage. I said to you from our side here, we're trying to get all the players as far as government departments are concerned to deal with, amongst other things, the question of non-payment of services. You understand? Let's also deal with that. We also understand that as an appropriations committee ourselves and DPE and National Treasury, we can't be able to even to solve that one. It needs a bigger involvement and engagement of everybody. But with those a few remarks, thank you so much, Prof and your team and Chairperson in his absence. Thank you very much, honorable members. I think this was a very fruitful engagement, so that you start understanding where each and every one of us is coming from and start to empathize with the challenges that we are facing. But thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned, and bon voyage for those who stay in Johannesburg and Gauteng. Leave us with our cold weather and go to a dry Gauteng. Thank you.
Yeah, well.